Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. I am your host, Katya Allison. So what have you gotten yourself into? I'll tell you, together we're decoding marketing to make it accessible for everyone, cutting through the BS and getting down to the nitty gritty. In each episode, you are going to walk away with a nugget or an insight that you can bring into your professional and sometimes even a personal life. So stick around and take a listen to all the knowledge bombs that are being dropped every episode. Joining me today is Ryan Shoot, a powerhouse marketing strategist, founder of an eight-figure agency and partner in the Wizard of Ads groups. His journey from his family's furniture business to becoming a nationally recognized brand architect is a story of grit, boldness, and brilliance. And in this episode, we talk about how to create lasting brand distinction, not by being louder, but by being truer. From his use of the commander's intent, a military philosophy that empowers team creativity, to his analogies that bring clarity and complexity, he shares a lot of stuff that you're going to want to write down. So if you're tired of generic messaging and ready to build a brand that resonates, get ready. You're about to learn how emotion, values, and even a little bit of cheekiness can turn your brand into a marketing landmark. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing.
Ryan, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. Had a little bit of a technical difficulty, but there's nothing like a round two for me to really get it going. So welcome to the podcast. Excited to have you on here. Today, we're going to be talking about being a disruptive brand. But before we do that, I want my audience to get to know you. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Let's start with the easy questions here. What was your first role as a marketer or marketing role, whether it had marketing in the title or it didn't?
I started off as a marketer when I was 20 years old. My family business was a furniture store. Grandfather, father, mother, grandmother all worked in the business. And I started off as a salesperson, then evolved into the administration work, and then they threw me into a manager's chair. And one of the first decisions I had to make was how much I was going to spend on those radio ads and what they were going to say. And then the newspaper guy came in, and then I'm starting to realize I have to figure out this budget and adjusted to my payroll and make sure that I'm keeping all the plates spinning. And that was really how I was going to thrust into marketing.
And that's where you got the bug and you've stuck it out, which is what I always love to hear. What is your current role?
Today, I'm blessed to operate an eight-figure agency in the Wizard of Ads ecosystem. Wizard of Ads is a company out of Austin, Texas, and we really just kind of focus in on the brand forward strategies of marketing. Creative writing, and then the mass media buying, and then aligning all of those channels in with all of the other production houses and digital marketing agencies that help us out with digital presence and other brand elements online.
What do you love about what you currently do? And be mentally and emotionally prepared, because I'm going to also ask you, what, if anything, do you not like about what you do? But let's start with the good. What do you love about what you currently do?
I love coming up with a plan that can actually be implemented. No matter what the size of a company is, you can really come up with something that's going to work in marketing. And it's almost always disproportionate or unexpected. It's unpredicted, you know, in the way that we design it. Because so many people think that you have to kind of do a lot of meat and potatoes, digital presence, pay-per-click stuff, when you really don't nowadays. There's lots of other ways to stand out.
I already want to ask you about all of those ways that you can stand out, because I like the fact that you said that it's not all about the clicks. To me, what I'm hearing you say is there are creative ways of getting to your goal outside of the very obvious. You know, F it, I'm going to ask you, what kinds of things are you talking about? And is that what feeds into being a disruptive brand for you?
It is absolutely the utter essence of a disruptive brand. And that's, understanding who you are as a company, as a person, the person, I liken it to what's called the commander's intent. Commander's intent, a military term that really kind of indicates, do I presume that I have to have full authority over my people, or do I have, do I give them flexibility to get the job done?
Yeah.
Back in the good old days of war with the Germans were fighting Napoleon, and they'd discovered that this kind of bashing two armies together thing wasn't working very well, and they were losing summarily. And Napoleon was kicking everyone's butt and taking names, and they had to make some changes. So they said, well, what if we become a little more flexible and let our guys just kind of take the hill, so to speak, with the rules of engagement that we put in place and the intention of what we're trying to achieve for this battle, campaign, whatever. Well, yeah. that turned the tides of the war. And that became one of the first areas where they studied in military training how to inject commander's intent into strategy. And to this day, it's studied at Navy SEAL training and all over the place, where you really do need to figure out how you can operationally build a way to have flexibility in your business. Well, what does that mean? It means that when you have something that really does stand tall, you need to give your staff and people the freedom to be able to deliver it in the way that they need to deliver it. When you figure that out, you're going to empower your staff.
Yeah.
But equally as much, once those staff are empowered, they're going to do what's right for you. And that's going to feed the culture, and the culture is going to feed the buying experience. And those two things are the things that we're going to start advertising about and telling people about. And those are the things that really stand tall, because they actually stand for something, where most companies just kind of stand for whatever makes you happy in the moment.
It's momentary bliss. And what I hear you saying is, it's, you know, this right balance of let me give you autonomy and the right amount of authority to kind of be in the space that you're going to occupy without restraint, right? Like, it's this idea of just kind of letting it go.
Yeah.
And letting people exist in their superpower state, you know? So
I would think that most people right now are listening going, that is absolute anarchy, and that will never work with my staff, because I'm working with imbeciles. And they're not working with imbeciles. They're working with people who are not yet clear on the thing that they're actually trying to do. And this is where commander's intent comes in. So when I studied all the core values and mission statements and all the other crazy nonsense that you see on websites all over the place that that are trying to, you know, somehow inspire a person into doing a thing, what I discovered is those things all fall into three buckets. And the three buckets are the three buckets of what every successful commander has ever done in any business operation, and frankly, pretty much every operation around the world. And it's helping people win, it's being trustworthy, and it's living gratefully. I'll be honest with you, the grateful part surprised me when we actually got down to the bare knuckles of the research. But when you start really starting, you know, start thinking as a marketer or as a business owner, what is it that those three things mean to this business, to me, to what the commander intended to achieve when they were trying to take that hill, i.e. close the sale, or, you know, hire staff, or, you know, answer that phone call. And when you clearly define that, you really do have a powerful path forward without a bunch of dusty nonsense sitting on a wall or a website somewhere that doesn't inspire anyone.
I think it's interesting that the grateful part surprised you a little bit, because to me, what I take away from identifying gratefulness is that I'm removing my ego from it. I'm, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm grateful for something, I'm looking for something to be grateful for. And it's forcing the silver lining approach. It's forcing positivity, right? Which I think is huge. And you have to remove yourself in order to do that.
And that's why you're really, really good at what you do. Right. And I'll tell you that is something that most people take a lot of time to get to.
Yeah.
And that's precisely it. The root of this whole thing is the chairman of the board sitting up in your head called the ego, right? That's telling you all these ridiculous things about yourself, not because he's trying to hurt you or she. It's because they're trying to protect you, right? The ego's job is to protect, but the ego's only job is to protect, which also means that it's limiting in its belief structure, and a bit deceptive, because misery does love company. Ultimately, when we recognize that, and we recognize the alternate to that, which is elevating the identity, right? Which is what the ego is attempting to do by not exposing you to any risk. That changes the game, but no big business has ever succeeded without a bit of risk, right? Just like the technical issues today, right? You can't have an adventure without a little bit of trouble, right?
That's so true. That's so true. There's this quote that I love that I always get wrong, but the essence of it is, I strive to be in the place between comfortable and uncomfortable, because that's where big things happen, right? Like if I'm sitting too comfortably, then I'm complacent. If I'm too uncomfortable, that's where like scared comes in. You got to have like this nice sweet spot. And it's funny because I think that it, to an outsider, it probably seems like, what does this all have to do with marketing? But I feel like it is like the essence of it is you're always having to kind of push the boundaries. You can play it safe or you can go way. I've talked to a lot of people who are like, let's go real big. And I'm like, you got to go somewhere in between and you have to hold the space for that.
Yes. Yeah. How can you be disruptive without disruption? Right. There's no comfort in disruption. Right. That's the counterintuitiveness of the path forward is that to do something innovative is to do something that has not been done, which by virtue of the fact, think about all of the things that you have in your life, right? Where you're like, do I really want to do that? I imagine last weekend I was at a Spartan race. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to do the run. And my friend Jonathan's like, dude, you just come out and just walk it and see what it's like. And I did. And I'm like, oh, this is what it's like. And I don't feel judged anymore. Like I imagined all of these hyper aggressive, like macho folks would be like, kind of like judging me. And they're like, no, these people are wonderful human beings who are very welcoming to the community. I'm like, all those things in my head, right? All those limiting beliefs, right?
Yeah. Now we're going to go down a rabbit hole. I told you I won't go down rabbit holes because the Spartan race is a really great example of it. And a great example of you like talking yourself into something without even realizing that it is a welcoming like environment and community because you're all crazy enough to do it. Y'all woke up one day and you're like, what if we created this crazy obstacle course where like you're running and you're lifting insane amount of things. It kind of takes you back to childhood where you're running and you're playing uninhibited, which I think leads to a lot of creativity. It leads to a lot of imagination, which I think feeds into like that disruption that you're looking for. Yeah. But I would like to ask you, when we talk about being disruptive, does that mean standing out amongst my competitors? Does it mean, kind of being that brand recognized name? Or is there something that's in between? Because we can't all be like a Kleenex or a Dunkin' Donuts that everybody knows by name, but are they disruptive brands?
No, neither of them are disruptive brands. They're just legacy brands. And there's been attempts from Dunkin' to kind of rebrand that position and they haven't done anything of note. They just end up becoming a bit of a staple in marketplace and have a little bit of distribution dominance to their favor. Ultimately, when we're looking at whether or not we're going to be disruptive or not, we have to really first decide what kind of business model we want to run. Are we going to be a highly custom tailored solution that we can not scale infinitely, but we can do amazing work for a small group of people? Do we want to be product distinctive where we have something just outrageously unique that no one can compare to us that allows us to stand out by product distinction? Or are we going to be operationally excellent, where we actually limit the amount of choices that a customer has for convenience, for pace, for efficiency, mm-hmm. and pricing, and all of the things that speak to the customer's angst or need? Or are we going to be distribution dominant, you know, like beer at a stadium? You're not bringing your outside beer in, not easily anyway. And
and stay tuned for some tricks.
That's right. Stay tuned. right. And ultimately that's where we start the question is, so often we're wrapped up with, you know, how am I going to be distinctive, or how am I going to be disruptive? You know, what channel am I going to use? You know, am I going to do pay-per-click ads or TV ads? Like, all of that is distracting. Start off with, mm-hmm. what do I have at my disposal right now? What do I do really, really well? What do I stand for? What do I stand against? And what consequence will I impose upon myself to demonstrate my true value by diminishing my position to gain their position? Now, sometimes at a home service company, it would be staying open late. Well, I have mm-hmm. the cost of staying open late, right? And the cost of convincing people to actually stay late to do the thing. For Lululemon pants, it's like, yes, the beautiful pants, it's going to cost you, right?
Yeah.
And it's going to cost you, but it's going to make your butt look fabulous. So just like, you know, accept the trade-offs. It's your choice.
That's their slogan, and they're sticking to it.
That's it, right? Yeah, they didn't buy that one when I pitched it.
It's a shocker.
That's it. I don't know what's his thinking, but we all know the truth, though. You know how we're remembered is different for everyone. but you know, it's to be disruptive. You have to do something disruptive, which means you have to be willing to do what others are not willing to do. And that doesn't mean you have to try to do some cockamamie thing that is unsustainable or, frankly, lacks salience. If it doesn't matter, right, then who cares if you're different? If I have an air conditioning company and I make all my air conditioners green, no one cares, right? Like, great, you're distinctive. But that doesn't matter. You're different. Who cares, right? You're different like everyone else is different. Distinction really.
Oh, man, Ryan.
How did he do that? I didn't even know how he got into me. I literally have on Do Not Disturb.
I thought that was distinct. Talk about disruption.
Yeah, surprise. That was my business partner. So at the end of the day, how do you become distinct? You become distinct with the values that you choose, and values are very different than beliefs. And it's the choice that you make to stand tall when other people are choosing to take what's convenient. You know, and that's fundamentally the difference between beliefs and values. When you Niels Bohr is a Nobel Prize physicist. He said the opposite of a profound truth can very often be an equally profound truth. And when you think about, say, freedom and responsibility, it's fantastic that we want freedom, and our employees all want the freedom to do their jobs. And as employers, we want them to be responsible. But what happens when the employee becomes the boss? Uh-huh. Now, the freedom that they sought before has been replaced by wanting their employees to be responsible, right?
Yeah.
And what's most interesting about that, those two profound truths, which are equally opposite, but equally profoundly true, is that responsibility actually gives you more freedom. Not unlike creativity is more powerful with constraints than it is untethered. For mm-hmm. example, if I said, Katya, draw me the any picture that you want, just the most beautiful picture that you can think of, you're like, I don't know what that's going to be, right? But if I said, draw me the most amazing pink elephant that you could ever draw, you'd be like, hold my beer. Okay. Right.
It's wine. Thank you very much. Right. But yeah, most definitely, you'd be amazed.
right. Right. And it's because that constraint allows us to think more broadly about something more refined. And that's a little nugget for the marketers on the call who are struggling to think about what creatively to come up with. Well, come up with the things that matter and are authentic, come up with what's true, and use that constraint as the superpower that you use to leverage what matters for the situation at hand.
I couldn't agree with you more. And quite literally, I said it today, because one of the things that I was working on earlier was product names, right? We've got this new product that's coming out, and I feel like I've done this time and time again. And this is where I remove my ego from everything that I'm doing, because it's not about me. Mm. It is about providing constraints, because ultimately the person that's trying to figure out a name for whatever it is that they're coming up with has no idea where to start. And so for me, my job, I feel like, is, okay, I'm going to give you the spectrum, and I'm going to give you reason why. And I have a rationale, and I also have a way that I got there, right? Like I've got my own constraints to get me to where I'm at. Now I have to present them to you without my ego, because my goal is not for you to select one of the names that I came up with because you agree with it. It's to get you closer to what we really need to get. And I think that you hit the nail on the head. Most marketers just don't think in that way, as far as like, okay, it's not about me being in charge of naming it. I mean, ultimately someone has to figure out, like someone has to be the person that says, yes, we're going with this name, but it's so much more about the constraints that you're talking about. And I feel like I feel like I'm always doing that in every job I've had. Like, no, my job is to just show you what I have, and then you edit it and get it to where you need to be. And I feel like it's an evolution of like where it starts from, but it's never like the name. So I've just gotten good at not being the one that's picked.
That's what, well, and there's certain power in that, but here's where this goes from there, you know, in this construct. If I had a box full of tennis balls and I threw the whole box of tennis balls at you, and there's all these balls coming at you, you don't catch any of the balls. They're all over the place. But if I took one ball and I just tossed it at you purposefully, you're going to catch that ball. And I took another ball and I tossed that ball to you, you're going to catch that ball. And over and over and over again, you'll continue to catch the ball, but you won't if it's all the balls all at once.
Yeah.
McDonald's doesn't tell everyone that they sell chicken McNuggets every time they run a TV ad. They just do da 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 da.
I'm loving it.
And you own them. That's the foundational difference between what it is that we're selling and what it is we think we need to sell. No one cares about chicken nuggets. Everyone cares that they feel right about going to McDonald's to get a convenient meal.
Yeah, that's so true. Now, and I also love your tennis ball analogy as well, too. I'm going to take that and run with it. I'm going to use it later on. I know that I'm going to.
I recommend getting some tennis balls. I just like get a lot. Get the prop.
Exactly. That's going to be the point in the meeting that I make. I'm like, hold on, guys. It's my turn. Let me bring out this bucket of balls. You guys try to catch five of them. And they're going to all be different colors too, right? Like, it's such a great analogy to use, especially in marketing.
We're talking about being distinct.
Yeah.
If you're trying to talk to everyone, you're talking to no one. So you're not distinct. If you're trying to convince a person of the 3, 10, 78 things that you do, and you're brilliant at all of them, you're confusing them and you're not being distinct anymore. You've been forgotten because there's nothing to hang on to. If we don't generate emotion, it is impossible to be distinct. And this is where marketing fails in twofold. One, they never get that long-term retention. You can get repetition, but that retention, the recall is minimal because there's no emotion attached to it. Think of every ad impression, every pay-per-click space, every truck wrap, every time a person visits a store, whatever, of a specific brand is a brick. Mm-hmm. You can either have a whole bunch of bricks piled in the back of your brain, or you can have a bunch of bricks, and every time you attach emotion, you slather on some mortar and you stick the brick on another brick. Eventually, you've built yourself a house that stands tall, big, and large in the customer's brain and remembers you as a landmark when it comes time for the thing that you're selling for them to buy. You're not going to have that if you don't bring in the emotion component. And again, you're not distinct, right?
Yes.
A isn't distinct, but a whole house is.
You are, I'm gonna tell you this right now. You are the king of analogies. I love it. You're like shooting them out and they like absolutely like connect and make sense with all of that. I do want to ask you though, because I think that we've talked about like, how can you make yourself distinct as a brand from like the business perspective? And I hear you, and I am, and we've talked about constraints to really get to that creative space where you can create something that is a little bit more disruptive. Mm-hmm. From a creative space, how do I actually connect those dots and make that work for my marketing? Does that question make sense?
Because like, makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Here's an example of one, because every answer is going to be unique to the business that you're dealing with. So this business is a business in Pennsylvania. It's an air conditioning, plumbing, and electrical company. Does residential repairs and replacements, maintenance, and its name is H.L. Bowman. Been around for like 89 years. Things have been around forever, ever, and run by a brilliant operator, incredibly operationally excellent. Just they have chosen their path and they're real good at it. And they have a competitor in town. Now I'm probably guessing there's like a brother or cousin or something is G.F. Bowman. Happens to have a plumbing, air conditioning, and electrical company in the same town. So the real problem that we needed to solve in having a business that needed to stand tall in a space where we need to have them pick up the phone, but not just pick up the phone, pick up the phone and get the right Bowman.
Yeah.
Is the problem we're solving. So given that that was the stakes, we needed to create a mechanism, a device within our advertising on mass media that had them calling H.L. Bowman. So what did we do? We created a 1950s camp cartoon character, because Bowman, their logo on their trucks is like a guy with a bow. And he's the H.L. Bowman. Bowman, may I be of assistance? And like... The missus always has, you know, a bit of a challenge, and the husband's always just a little bit of a, you know, a cluster head. And I'm trying to use my good word, my polite grown up words. And then Bowman comes in to solve the problem of the day. And then he invariably like puts an arrow through a fridge or something. And, you know, and it's like sound effects and the twang of the bow, you know, landing in its mark. And what it allowed us to do in a 1 minute radio commercial was to say H.L. Bowman 7 times. And there is absolutely no chance in the entire whole wide world of worlds that anyone is going to mistake G.F. Bowman for H.L. Bowman, because we call it the H.L. Bowman Bowman. And that company is now 7 times larger than it was. It was a over $10 million company, and in 3 years now it's an absolute behemoth. And it's a behemoth because they have a brilliant operator who knows how to do business, who trusted in a cheeky campaign where the storyline just like, it's like a sitcom every time you hear this thing. And then we play it at an outrageous repetition that nobody can escape hearing this thing, which means that half the town hears us because we can't reach everyone with radio. But the people that we couldn't reach tell the other people in town because the campaign is so distinctive. It's cheeky, cheeky, cheeky. And we spend very little time talking about, here's the thing we repair and we've been in business for 89 years. And, you know, we didn't even change the logo. It was the logo is tragic. It is so bad. It's good kind of tragic. And we love it for that because it plays right in to the thing that we had at our disposal. And that's what you do to figure out how to build a distinctive brand, is figure out what the problem is that you're actually trying to solve.
Yes, not what you want to scream into a megaphone, which I think for every brand and company that I've worked for, that's always like the biggest hurdle for me to have to get over with, you know, leadership or product owners in general, is that I get that you love this baby that you've created of a service or a product.
Yeah.
And no one cares. And like, that's a really tough conversation to have. Like, no one actually cares that it, like, what does it mean to them? It's always leading with the value first. There's that message. But what I hear you saying very distinctly is, it's what you have, and you've said this already, but it is what you have at your disposal. What are you actually trying to solve for? Is it getting this message out? Is it that it's something new and nobody else does it? Well, how do we get this message out? Not just that this is the thing. And how do we tie it with the value to make that, to be able to tell that story? Because to your point, going back to what you had said in the emotional connection, this is where storytelling comes into play, right? When I'm telling you a story about something that, like, you know, I got on here and told you that I woke up really early for something that was really hard, like that you have woken up really early at one point and have done something really hard. That is an emotional connection that we're trying to create. And there's storytelling at your fingertips, even as a brand. But when you don't allow the creative space to find it,
yeah,
it makes it really tough. Then you're pressured to, like, all right, I got to come up with a tagline.
That's right. Well, and you know, if I might be so cheeky, getting a person's attention is easy. Any idiot can get a person's attention. Keeping their attention until such time as the masses are looking to acquire what you sell is astoundingly hard.
Yeah.
And what we're trying to achieve with really good marketing is the tomorrow customer, not the one that you're trying to deal with today. Now, I'm not talking about sales activation stuff for today. That actually gets real, real easy when they already know you. But if the first place that you're meeting them is on Google as an unknown contender, and they're just picking you as they would, you know, a potato chip out of a bowl, then you're not marketing. You're just existing, and that's not going to work. It's going to cost you the most, and it's going to give you the worst kind of customer.
No, I couldn't agree more. Now, we've talked about, like, you know, creating a disruptive brand. We've talked about creativity. We've talked about even being cheeky and standing out. I kind of wanted to hear from you, based on just everything that's just happening as we evolve, not in the world. So maybe I should narrow down my question a little bit. In regards to marketing trends, what do you think people should be out on the lookout for?
Well, obviously AI is what's standing the tallest out there. And what to look out for is the pace at which things are changing, but never lose sight of the integration of the human and the soul into this. You know, no matter what kind of code is written, no matter what kind of iteration comes from our chats and GPTs and variants, you will always need to have the human fuel behind that to come up with truly compelling content that people actually want to read, that they actually want to listen to, that they actually want to engage in. Will there be ways that we can test and iterate and fine tune that with these tools? Absolutely. 100% supportive of it. We are well versed in the creative space. We have AI people, we have digital data scientists, excuse me. We have all kinds of access to some of the highest level of information around the world as Wizard of Ad partners. And what it clearly continues to point towards is, while these things will accelerate not only your own ability to do better, but your competitions equally as much, it's a distraction in so many ways where we lose sight of the human connection. Stop worrying about machine bonding and always, always, always remind yourself to connect with the human bonding.
I love that. One thing that I will also say about AI, because I think it ties back to like what we were talking about like, constraints, is I think AI is really great for the person that's sitting at home, like myself, when you're working from home and you don't have people around you. I need constraints as well in order to be creative. And what I have found is that AI, that's how I leverage AI. I'm like, I need ideas for this, and it gives me something, and I work within that, and I either stick close to it or I go completely a different path. But I think it's, to me, that's such a that's the way that I leverage AI. It's like built in constraints for me. So I think
Absolutely. You
that.
know, I think of it almost like I have ADHD, and body doubling is a thing. Just working in proximity to another person has merit. I treat it almost like brain doubling in that sense, where I can bounce an idea off it, but I also get really good, what's the word, rabbit holes pace. I get it into the flow states by exploring this thing. And it's like, what if I put this weird thing together with this weird thing? And oh, what if I did this? And how would this work? And what is the thing? And again, it's not going to give me the end result, but it's going to give me that chance to explore in my brain with almost an external gratification, right? A feedback loop that allows me to go, here's the world that I'm going to step into now that was unpredictable, that was unexpected. I want this energy. I want this vibe. How can I pull that out to get the thing that I'm looking for? Again, not because we're pursuing cute and clever. It's easy to get attention. I'm looking to hold attention. And that's deeply, profoundly more important than getting attention.
And you have to be human to do that, because you're the one that holds the emotions. You're the one that holds the emotions. You're the one that holds the tone for it. You're the one that can interpret that based on like what it is that you receive,
And if I can
what
be
you
so
receive back.
bold, I would say is it, you also are flawed, and people don't trust things that are flawless, and things that are flawless are not interesting. The things that are interesting are the broken, damaged, flawed, human, raw things that make you feel in different ways.
Because there's a story behind that.
Because there's
You
a
know what I mean? There's a story behind like that scar, that furniture, that jewelry, that brand, how they came up with the logo, like where did that even come from? There's a story behind that for sure. Now I told you that I would say this, but I could really talk to you forever. I have one final question for you. And that question is, if you knew then what you know now, what is the marketing or non-marketing advice that you would give to yourself?
The biggest piece of advice that I try to hold myself to every day is less is more.
Love it. Less is more. And you said it in that statement as well too. So that's a short and sweet way to wrap it up in a bow. Thank you so much for coming on here and just sharing your thoughts and your wisdom as well.
Thank you so much. I really am grateful for the time to talk.
Same, same.
I'm ready to dive into the key takeaways. Number one, if Google is the first place they're finding you, it's already costing you. This one hit me immediately because it's so true and often overlooked. Ryan said if the first place that you're meeting someone is on Google as an unknown contender, you're not marketing, you're just existing. So let's unpack that one a little bit. If someone has to Google you, it means your brand didn't already exist in their mind. You weren't a memory, a recommendation, or even a mental bookmark. You were just a name on a list. And probably one that they're comparing on price, reviews, or even convenience. And guess what? That's the most expensive way to compete. You are just paying to be seen. You are stuck in this reactive transactional zone of marketing. Now, contrast that with what Ryan proposes, which is building a brand that sticks before someone even goes looking. But how? With story, with emotional resonance, with repetition that connects. It's not about flooding every single channel. It's about choosing what you stand for and finding memorable human ways to express that consistently. What is the real takeaway here? Don't rely on Google to introduce you. Instead, build a presence, a feeling, a distinct story that lives in your audience's head before they ever type in a search. Okay, key takeaway number two. Responsibility fosters creativity. It's not a blocker, it's a guide. Now, this one was kind of a bit of a curveball as a creative. We're so used to thinking of creativity as this wild, boundless energy that the more freedom someone has, the more original that they'll be. But Ryan flips that idea. He says that responsibility actually gives you more freedom and backed it up with this brilliant analogy. He said, if I asked you to draw something, you'd freeze. There are too many options. What do I even draw? But if I said, draw me the best pink elephant you can imagine, suddenly your brain lights up. Now you've got direction. That's what responsibility does. It gives people a sense of purpose, constraints, and clarity. And when people know what's expected, when they know the mission, they rise to it with creativity. It's also a leadership principle. Instead of controlling the outcomes, define your commander's intent. Set the goal. Let your team figure out how to take that hill. That's where innovation and ownership meet. So the next time you're trying to unlock your team's creativity, don't give them all the freedom in the world. Give them responsibility. The creativity will follow. Kind of trust the process. Key takeaway number three and my final one. Creating a distinct brand means standing for something and accepting the trade-offs. Okay. This idea about distinctiveness. Ryan makes a sharp distinction here. Being different isn't the same as being distinct, and we want to be distinct because anyone can be different. Paint all your AC units green. Sure, that's different, but does it even really matter? Being distinct is rooted in meaning. It's about knowing what you stand for and what you stand against. It's about choosing values that you live out, even when it's inconvenient. It means making those trade-offs, like staying open later than your competitors, like spending your marketing budget on storytelling instead of product specs, like using humor or cheeky creativity that doesn't really appeal to everyone, but it sticks with your people. And yes, it means not trying to do all of the things for all of the people. Ryan's tennis ball analogy, not a surprise, there's another analogy, explains it perfectly. He says, if you throw 10 tennis balls at someone, they won't catch any. But if you toss just one and they catch it, they're going to remember it. That's how your brand should feel. It should feel focused, purposeful, emotionally sticky. So if you want to build a distinct brand, ask yourself, what's that one tennis ball that I want my audience to catch? What's the story that I want stuck in their brain long after that ad ends? And there it is. Those are my three big takeaways that are going to stick with me, and I hope with you too. If this episode gave you some new perspectives or challenged your thinking, I'd love for you to share it. Text it to a friend, drop it in your Slack or Teams, or even post your favorite quote on LinkedIn and tag me and Ryan. A very special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Ike, and thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.